League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
I know, yeah. We got battered last week. I don't know what Jack brought that beer, but it was like 6%.
Oh, really?
And in here, we were bollocks.
I haven't heard it.
Hello and welcome to Season 2, Episode 28 of the Tottenham Way Podcast. I'm Tom and I'm your host, and we welcome back Dan Kilpatrick
all the way
from Thailand.
Thank you.
When did you land?
I landed this morning at about 6 a.m.
Oh, so you're feeling fresh.
I'm struggling a bit. It's a lot worse going out there because you like miss a night's sleep. Coming back, I've just had an extra long night's sleep. I made a rookie mistake. I checked in and I picked the emergency exit, and I thought that's a result, isn't it? Extra legroom.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Then it's a night flight, so they turn off all the lights, and the loo's like opposite you.
Oh no, yeah.
People go in, the light it's really bright, and so it kept waking me up. So my descent from like really smug to really enraged just sort of steadily progressed as
like
the flight went on.
Season.
And by the end of it, I was just ready to crack.
How long's the
fucking
flight?
Stop going to the loo, people. I'm trying to sleep.
How long's the flight?
Well, I flew from Phuket, which is where I was. You change at Bangkok. In total, it's about 16 hours.
Oh, so that's long enough for you to need a good at least a third of that you need to sleep, surely.
It's one of those that's quicker going there. And then, I don't know if it's wind or something.
No, it's the earth is turning. So if you think, if you're flying the same way as the earth turning.
Okay.
Yeah,
I
my mate's
like
a pilot.
Wind.
Yeah, wind. Maybe that adds a factor. But
okay.
My mate's a pilot, because I said it, I was like, how can it take, if we were going to fly to Germany or something, I was like, how can it take like, I don't know, an hour and a half to get there and an hour and 15 back? I just couldn't make sense of it. But yeah, it's because if you go against the earth's, the UK's coming to meet you, isn't it, almost? Yeah.
Yeah, I never worked that out.
Yeah, it's not something I'd ever really thought about before.
There was a similar thing where you look at your flight path, you know, you can go on those little screens and you can be like, oh, we're over Moscow, I'm worried or whatever. It's in a big curve. So I said to my mate, like, why don't we just go on a straight line, like, through the Middle East? He's like, because the Earth's round. we're going the directest route and you're looking at a flat map of a round Earth. And I was like, oh, yeah, quite stupid.
Yeah, you've got a degree, haven't you?
I've got 2 degrees.
Wow.
Everybody.
One of them in aviation. You sent us a picture, or you sent the wider Spurs group, if you like, the picture of you with a hologram Eric Lamella. Where was this?
Oh, that was from ages ago.
I thought it was maybe a marketing thing that they had out there.
No, new stadium press conference, there was like a press conference before they did this 3D experience I talked about on one of the pods. And you could go into this little booth and they'd kind of project a hologram of any player or Pochettino you wanted. So obviously I picked the main man.
Of course, yeah.
And then I was just randomly in Thailand and the Spurs press officer just sent me the pictures, which I hadn't seen yet.
So he
had obviously just gotten through and sent them on. So I was like, okay.
Did seem like the sort of thing that, as a marketing opportunity, maybe like sort of the Far East would do. Like a picture with your favourite. Do you know what I mean? It seemed to time out.
I wasn't in Thailand. So. So I replied to the press officer, like, he's alive. This is great to see.
Yeah.
Yeah. No response.
No banter there. No. You've had your picture.
Yeah.
Well, welcome back.
Thanks,
you've
mate.
Missed. So when did you go away? It was after.
I went away on the day before the Stoke game. So I didn't go to Stoke and Everton.
Right. Okay. Who went instead?
Nick Miller went to Everton instead.
Has he briefed you?
He said he was going to and he hasn't.
Ah, shame.
No, Nick's great. He's like a freelancer who does a lot of bits for ESPN. And I think I would have been going to Stoke with John Bruin, who's one of the senior football writers. And he just did it without me. no one to carry his bags.
No biggie.
Sadly.
Yeah. But you've seen, you must have obviously seen the main highlights.
I saw the whole Stoke game. I watched the whole game. I went the day before the Stoke game. So I watched this whole Stoke game in Thailand.
In Thailand?
Yeah.
Is there a supporters bar or anything like that out there? Because it's starting to become more popular.
I don't know. There will be in Bangkok, but I was in Phuket, which is an island. So yeah. I was just in a bar, and it was more or less just me and my mate.
We were on telly as well, weren't we? So there's no...
Yeah.
Sometimes places will have like a proper dodgy stream of it because there is a... market,
it's one of those places where they've got more live football than the UK. Like they've got every game.
That's why live streaming exists.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's always some really random, like, I think it's Warren Barton is on Australian Premier League coverage now. Really random, but you just think you could make a really good career for yourself now as an ex-pro.
Well, this is going to sound like a humble brag. In fact, not even a humble brag, just a brag. But someone got in touch with me on Twitter and was like, will you come on Premier League Productions before a game a few weeks ago?
Right.
I can't remember which game it was now. One of the home games at White Hart Lane. Just come out on the touchline and do an interview. And I was like, this is going to be going out in like Vietnam.
Yeah.
And Djibouti or whatever.
Right.
And apparently my brother texted me from Australia being like, you've just been on the Aussie Sky Sports talking complete nonsense and looking really hungover. And I was like, oh, I didn't realise that.
Did you mention the pod or...?
I didn't, no.
It's a shame, mate.
I honestly thought it was budget, but I think...
Never miss an opportunity.
Yeah, to plug.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
I think it was sort of the biggest overseas one, as it were, Premier League Productions.
All right, shit.
Yes, I've got to get in with them.
Yeah.
Pick myself like up. It.
Yeah. Get an agent.
Yeah. He's supposed to pick me up.
Knew that was coming. Right. Everton game. Ninth Premier League home win.
What I did in Thailand,
oh, sorry. No, yeah, absolutely. I thought
We should probably talk about Tottenham.
Remember we one of the really early episodes of the Tottenham Way was talking about you tubing in Laos, wasn't it?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, there was no tubing.
What the fuck did we used to talk about?
It was similar to this.
It was actually, yeah. Really strange.
Yeah. No, I won't tell you, I won't bore you with the details.
But it was good.
Yeah,
just refreshed.
Just to say, I want to big it up. I love it. Every time I go away, I'm like, if it's Belgium or Argentina or Russia, I'm always like, these people know how to live. Thai people know how to live.
That's the latest one.
Spicy food, cold beer.
You're so impressionable.
I just love it. I love going on holiday.
Yeah.
That was good. They're very nice people, very, very polite. And it's thoroughly recommend it. Good country.
Good stuff.
Good for sex tourism as well, if that's your thing.
Well, yeah. That's quite well known.
FYI.
Yeah, a bit weird that you've put that in there, but we can only presume.
I didn't go for that reason, just to make it clear.
Yeah, but, that is a metaphor.
That's the only sort of slightly depressing thing about it is you sort of...
It's everywhere,
isn't it? You can't escape
it.
You do see it and you're like, oh, is that like... And you don't know... Oh, I don't want to. Why have we started talking about that?
I don't know.
We've
got so much to talk about as well. We're not short of stuff because we've just had our.
Moving on. Yeah. Maybe edit that out. Actually.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah. No, okay. We've had our ninth Premier League home win in a row, which is a new record. It hadn't occurred to me, actually. And I think if I'd have known that before the game, I probably would have been a bit more nervous about it because I was not worried.
I didn't see that stat doing the rounds before the game.
Very
at all.
Quiet. Everything about White Hart Lane this season has been very. Underplayed a little bit, hasn't it? And we're tearing down
because the club have now admitted that it might not be the last season of White Hart Lane.
Is there an admittance, or has it just been due diligence?
By me a few months ago.
True.
I think it's just due diligence, but the minutes for the trust latest meeting, board to board, I think Levy said that the reason they still haven't activated the Wembley clause is because. They just don't know something could happen, which is more or less what we've known all along.
Yeah.
But it's the first time the club have publicly admitted it. I mean, the press team have been briefing to that effect more or less for 2, 3, 4 months.
Yeah. So what's the latest we can sign the thing on Wembley?
I think it's the 23rd of March.
We're 6 months away.
We have to tell
away.
The FA
right.
by 23rd of March if we want to use Wembley next year for every home game. And if that deadline passes, then
up for grabs because Chelsea are after it as well, aren't they?
Hart Lane next season.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's a big statement. I didn't realise it was quite that. Black and white, but
I think, unless they've got a plan B, Milton Keynes or whatever that no one knows about. But I think the whole point is, the club doesn't want to spend 2 years away. They really, really doesn't. Mm. They know it's going to be damaging, and they know it's going to cost money. So, if the new stadium isn't going to be ready in time, they just have to stay put for another year.
Mm. It's a good feeling around Spurs at the moment as well, and I guess they're doing everything they can to not cut that off, I guess. And I think that's why they tried so hard with Wembley this year, and unfortunately it was just the performances that was the worst part about it. But who knows, FA Cup might turn that around. But Everton game, really, I thought it was a proper performance. I was a little bit nervous before the game. I felt Everton are very much the best of the rest, and they're the sort of team that could come and nick a draw off of us, but kind of furiously committed performance from us. They started the first 10 minutes, they were kicking lumps out of us. You should have been a few yellows, I think. They were really quite nasty, but I don't think we were surprised by it necessarily, but I just don't think we started the game in the same kind. But we just stepped up, like, immediately. Some, like, Wanyama and Dembele, almost in that big brother style that they have on the team of that centre midfield, just kind of stepped up. And Tom Davis, the young Everton guy, got a couple of lessons very early on in that game, and it was a lot of fun to watch it because Wanyama was all over him at one point, and he didn't want the ball, and we cut out two or three of their players by doing that.
I mean, I haven't watched a lot of Everton, and to just make it clear to listeners, I didn't watch the Everton game because I was on the flight back,
which is fair,
from Phuket. Terribly planned holiday, really. But I saw the lineup before I got on the plane, and it did look like they were playing three defensive midfielders, which is what I seem to remember them doing at Goodison Park.
Had no width at all.
Gay and
Schneiderlin.
That day it was Barry Gay and McCarthy, I think.
Yes,
Goodison,
it was.
And they replaced him. So I don't know if they do that every week, but that did seem really negative. And then they had kind of Davis and Barkley as the kind of flare up ahead. But just a point to say that surprised me, really.
They seemed to be negating, there was an attempt to negate an area of the pitch where we dominate but don't really need stopping. Does that make sense? Dembele and Wanyama are the destroyers of the team, and they keep things ticking over, but they don't... Didn't seem like there was enough there for them to consider playing three defensive midfielders.
I think with Spurs, if you stop Dembele and Wanyama from playing, then you stop the service to the important players.
True, true.
And that's, I remember you, I don't know if you said it just then or if you said it to me, I think, no, you said it just before we started recording, that the Everton game reminded you of Chelsea.
Yeah.
And we were saying after the Chelsea game with Liam on the pod that game was won by Dembele and Wanyama because they won the midfield battle, and then it meant they could get the service to Walker and Rose and in turn Eriksen, and that means the service comes to Ali and Kane, and that's how Spurs win the game. And I imagine the idea behind Koeman doing that was to try and stop Spurs from playing, so stop the wide players and Ali getting any service.
Yeah, I guess it worked to a degree from watching it myself and watching it back again after I went, and it was really good fun to watch. Like there's been a few games at White Hart Lane this season have been really good, but tended to be not particularly competitive or stodgy. Like the Borough game was competitive, but in the wrong way. It was just purely just somebody trying to cancel another team out. But Everton were trying to play Lukaku in, trying to get Barkley on the ball. It's a really good game of football, I thought. And we stepped up, and we really stepped up to it. We didn't have a lot to deal with necessarily in defence, but what Vertonghen and Alderweireld and Dyer had to do, they did very well.
Everyone's been raving about Vertonghen.
Vertonghen was excellent. There was one tackle, it was in the second half. We will get on to Vertonghen, I've put it on the running order, but he went up, Lukaku was running at him, and he won the ball back, and it was kind of loose, and he did that. Do you remember Alderweireld against Dortmund last year, where he kind of pirouetted on the ball to get out of
tricks in a row?
Out of trouble. And he kind of did that in a, like, just did a little circle on his own, and went up the pitch. And he seemed to do that all game. And they're all doing it now. And this is the virtues of having those three fit, because no other defenders, certainly that we've got, can do what they do, because they're so comfortable on the ball. And Vertonghen did it a few times where he just fucked off up the pitch. Could have scored a couple,
the
actually.
The funny thing about Vertonghen is when he got injured about 6 weeks ago, the general feeling or the consensus was, oh, he's the one player in that 11 with the wing backs that you can afford to lose. Mm. He's the one, because Wimmer's going to slot straight in, or Ben Davis will slot straight in. And actually, with hindsight, it's almost like he's like the one Spurs couldn't afford to lose.
He's like an extra midfielder. But he's good enough to do it.
Yeah, I mean, Rose has been one of the best players in the league this season. But without having watched the Everton game, apparently Davis was much improved.
He was.
And
good.
It does seem like, actually, you can play that five at the back without Rose. It's not as good, but you can't play without Vertonghen.
I put this question later on, but I do want to ask. I want to ask it now. In that case. So the 3-4-3 formation is something we've gone back to against Stoke and against Everton, but with Davis in the side. Do you think that we abandoned it a little bit too quickly, and were we maybe a bit spooked by, because the first game that we had to do it without one of the first choice was City, and it was Wimmer that came in, and we struggled very early, and City were very good, but maybe that should have come into Poch's thinking a bit more, that this is just a really good City team. Because I can't remember, I think we played Sunderland next.
Yeah,
and we rewarded Son. Four. Yeah, and we rewarded Son with a start, which is fair enough, and he did get the equaliser against City, but ultimately didn't do anything. And I think we'd had this discussion before, but basically the question, do you think Poch was maybe a bit too hasty? Was he a bit spooked by what he saw against City to think, you know what, we can't play Wimmer or Davis or anyone like that here. We need all five, six of them fit to be able to do this.
The thing is, when you listen to Pochettino, and he said it again this week at the press conference that I didn't go to before the Everton game, he was talking about signings in the summer, and he said he wanted to sign versatile players who could play in different positions. And I think in his head, I'm not sure of how much he believes it, but certainly his rhetoric is, it doesn't matter about the formation. What matters is, he says things like animations and actions and et cetera, et cetera. And I think in his head, he always wants to get the best 11 players on the pitch, or the most informal 11 players on the pitch. And he wants to be able to have different formations in order to do that, and he thinks in a way that the formation is kind of immaterial if you've got your best 11 on the pitch. But having said that, that hasn't been the case, has it? Because whenever Spurs have tried to do the 4-1-4-1, for instance, in Europe, it's just been awful. And whenever they've tried the 4-2-3-1 in the last few months, it hasn't been as good as the three at the back. I think, as I said, the problem with the reason he abandoned it was probably because Vertonghen and Rose were out.
But it wasn't the case against City. Rose started against City.
Yeah, okay.
He got injured against Sunderland, didn't he?
He changed it at half-time against City, or midway through the first half. But then Rose was injured for Sunderland. And Davis
he got injured for Sunderland. He was injured
He got injured
in a tackle. I'd totally agree with you if it wasn't for that.
I thought he had a...
He had his knee in a brace
after City.
But Davis came on.
I think perhaps Pochettino was a bit quick to abandon that. But with the risk of sounding like a Spurs player or like Pochettino himself, it has to be on a kind of game-by-game basis, doesn't it? You can't say, this is the formation for the rest of the season. This is what we're going to play. You have to actually think about the opponent. And probably Sunderland is such a poor team that you could have... Spurs could have done it with Wimmer in there.
Mm.
I think Poch lost faith in Wimmer in that first half against City. That was his kind of last chance. And I feel a bit for him because I haven't been his biggest supporter this year, but really, if you look at the games he's actually played in, he's kind of been hung out to dry by Pochettino.
Yeah, and as well, I suppose if Davis... I don't know, one swallow doesn't make a summer or whatever it is, but Davis having a good game against Everton does suggest that, you know, these players that don't play a lot do need to play themselves into a bit of form. And that is definitely worth considering.
But yeah, just to go back to my original point, I think we all thought Vertonghen was the man who could easily be replaced, because that's what happened last year and Wimmer stepped in for him, didn't he?
Yeah.
Albeit in a back four.
And with Toby.
Yeah, and with Toby. Yeah. But I think he's obviously been on great form this season, and he obviously enjoys playing in that back three, and he's the one who's got the most license to roam. And you saw it before he got injured as well.
Yeah, it's how he got injured, pretty much. He just bombed off, didn't he?
And from what little I saw of the Everton game, the odd highlight, extended highlights, and from what I saw in the Stoke game, he's almost doing both jobs. He's almost rotating with Davis a lot of the time, and they're complementing each other quite well. So I think you can play Davis there if Vertonghen's fit. If you're playing Davis and Wimmer, then probably Poshkin's got a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, we're certainly...
This is obviously while Rose is out.
Mm.
So as soon as... The thought of Rose coming back in to the Everton team is really exciting, actually.
Yeah.
Like, I just...
We are one player off of our best 11.
And it feels like we have been for the whole season.
I think we have, yeah.
I don't think... There's been, like, what, one game?
Well, the games that we've actually been able to play this 3-4-3 formation, however late we actually managed to consider it our first choice, we've played, like, 2.5 games with it. And that's Chelsea and West Brom, which we spanked both of them. And even West Brom, Vertonghen went off early. Don't think we've played a full team again, which is a shame, but it's just something that you have to deal with, I suppose. All of this is putting off, speaking about Kane, who's got another two. Ollie Whitefoot on Twitter pointed out to me today, at his current scoring rate, he will be our highest ever Premier League scorer at this point next season. Absurd.
Yeah.
He's currently on 68 in 106 games. I think he's got 83 or 84 in all competitions. It's absurd. And what I wanted to talk about was, we talk about the goals, and a lot of people are starting to talk about the stats behind Kane. And Football 365 did a pretty good article highlighting some of it.
For ESPN,
good. Fine. I think it should be put everywhere. Yeah. But just the ones that stood out for me, since the start of the 2014-15 season, when obviously Kane broke through, most goals in the Premier League, 65, three more than Aguero. Most goals by any English player since the start of 2014-15, 65. Next highest, Vardy with 34. So he's double. And people are still talking about him not being England's best striker, but whatever. Second most goals in all competitions across Europe this calendar year. So since obviously January, 14, one behind Messi.
And level in league goals, level with Messi, both on 11.
Yeah,
in the calendar year. Yeah. Although I'm just going to say, a bugbear of mine, calendar year stats aren't real stats.
We all know this.
It's just a fake thing that people do.
Form, isn't it? Yeah, that's just form since January.
But nothing in football's ever judged on, like, oh, he smashed it in 2017. It's judged on seasons, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true.
But nonetheless, it's Kane. So
yeah, and he could have had a hat trick. He could have had his fourth hat trick.
I saw his interview. He said he was pissed off that he didn't get a hat trick.
He should have been as well. Just a couple. He scored easier. He scored harder chances in that game. He was. But yeah, this is what I don't want to talk about the goal stats. There's something about Kane that we all know as Spurs fans about this. It's the intangible thing. The thing that Gerrard used to do for Liverpool. I think he's getting to that point where you can just rely on him to come up at the moment. He doesn't have to have a good game. He'll score a tap-in and a penalty against West Ham to win you a game in the last 2 minutes. What Kane did against Everton for his first goal, when he won the ball back in his own... Or in
reminded
half,
me of that goal he scored against Chelsea.
There was another moment which I remember purely because I remember thinking at that point, this guy is so much more than goals. Last season against United... in the 3-0 at home. In the first half, really cagey. They didn't give us anything. It was proper. We were getting properly Van Haaled. But we weren't really clicking and nothing was quite going for us. Kane, almost the exact same point on the pitch, picked up the ball. He won the ball back, picked up the ball and pegged it towards United's goal. And he wasn't going anywhere. There was nobody supporting him. But he gained 20 yards, 25 yards and was fouled. And after that, we got on top instantly. And it's that instinct of just going forward doesn't matter if it doesn't necessarily go anywhere, but if you gain, he's like a territory player, if you gain that 20 yards. But now we've got this support network around him of Ali and Kane, Ali, Ericsson and the wing backs, where there is support for him. And he can just, they highlighted it on Match of the Day. When he hits the ball, Ericsson and Ali are both ahead of him. And what he brings to us is so much more than just putting it in the back of the net. That goal against Everton epitomised what Harry Kane can do for you. And do you remember the Everton game a couple of years ago under Pochettino when Soldado scored?
Oh, when we all thought Soldado was actually going to be good.
When he was back, yeah. Basically, the peak of Soldado's career, or Tottenham career. But everyone was like, that's when it clicked. And Kane played a slightly deeper number 10 role in that game as well.
Yeah.
And it just reminded me of the difference between then and now. And he's a monster now, but he's still got that instinct. Get the ball, go forward. And he had a crack and it went in. And it was another cagey game where we're now 1-0 up purely because of Harry Kane.
Yeah, I agree with what you say. I actually think that it is important just to look at the raw stats and look at that Football 365 piece and just marvel at the stats. Because there is sort of an intangible about Kane. He's not glamorous. He's not particularly marketable. And I think non-Spurs fans, basically, we all know this as Spurs fans, but non-Spurs fans still can't get it in their head how good he is. And they can't accept it. They can't deal with it. And they refuse to admit it because of he's a bit of a mouth breather and the way he looks and the way he used to look as well.
And he was taking corners for England, stuff like that.
Yeah, and Trunk, who came on the pod last week, said earlier, you know, after about two performances for City, Gabriel Jesus was being... Everyone was like, oh, this guy is... He was actually compared to Neymar.
Yeah.
By people, and it's like, look, have a look at Kane's stats. He's got a better ratio of goals in the Premier League than Van Nistelrooy and Suarez.
Isn't he second only to Henry?
He's second only to Henry and...
Oh, yeah, there is someone else, isn't there, but I can't remember who it is. Might have been Suarez or someone.
No, he's ahead of Suarez. I can't remember now.
No, but he's sort of up there, isn't he?
He's well ahead of Shearer in terms of goal, you know, strike rate. He's 22.
Mm.
You're looking at someone who could potentially break Shearer's record, and Shearer's on record saying that he's really, really good, and potentially, you know, one of the greats.
Yeah.
So I think he could be our top
Premier League scorer next season. It's not going to take him 10 years of hard toil. And if he'd have not had the injuries, he would have been at a better club sort of thing.
Thing is, in 24, it's not like he's been lucky with injuries and he's played a lot of games. But even in 2014, he didn't get in the league team till November.
Yeah.
And this year, he missed 8 weeks.
And last season, he didn't score his first Premier League goal until November.
Yeah, it took ages to get going.
Yeah.
So it's not as if. Yeah, it's not as if he's played every minute of every game in that time either.
Mm.
Yeah, he is remarkable.
And it's also that ignores the development as a physical development that he's made. You look at him now, he is a monster. He's ripped and he's broad and he's like when Bale finally got his chance at Spurs and he was a bit of a weedy kid. But once he started to pick up that bit of momentum and he just became, like, his shoulders, he's an athlete and Kane is turning into an athlete. And again, he doesn't look like one necessarily, but if you sort of take his face away, he kind of does. He's a proper centre forward, you know. He scores every type of goal as well. He's just so good.
I mean, another thing I think that almost works against him is he's not the kind of player who fellow pros are going to come out and say it's an absolute nightmare to play against him. That hasn't really happened, has it? Where, you know, it was Henry and Bale. You know, you can well imagine fullbacks saying, in the media, you know, it's impossible to stop Gareth Bale. It's impossible to mark him.
Mm.
But because Kane doesn't have that blistering pace and all that kind of brute, sort of Drogba-esque strength, he doesn't tend to get that kind of praise.
Yeah.
But he's just good at everything.
It's almost hard to see what he does.
Yeah,
but again, if you don't watch him every week.
He's incredibly effective. And I read a bit comparing his performance with Lukaku this week, and it was mainly just focused on the way he moves. And I think the gist of it was that Lukaku is quite easy to mark, actually.
Mm.
He's easier to pick up. And with Kane, he he's kind of popping up all over the place. He quite often pops up on the right nowadays.
It's everywhere. He is everywhere. And again, I think that helps.
And like the Everton, the first goal Everton came from, he's on the left flank, wasn't he? And
he won the ball back.
Burst inside.
Yeah. It's and as well, I think it helps having that Ali, someone like Ali. In the same way as in his first season when Chadley and Eriksen were chipping in with a lot of goals, that onus not being entirely on him does help Kane. But I don't feel like they were able to occupy defenders in the same way that someone like Ali does. And I do think that partnership is key for his success going forward. I mean, Ali's now on 13 after his goal. He's two behind Ibrahimovic in the league. And he's 20.
Yeah. And I think the fact that Kane's, these performances against Stoke and then Everton have, it's been perfect for Ali, because after the Ghent game, it could have easily been all the focus on him.
Mm.
All the focus on him. Did he score against Stoke as well?
Yeah, he scored the fourth.
And he scored against Everton.
Yes.
He's actually responded incredibly to the Ghent game, like a player well beyond his years, in the perfect possible way. But because Kane's been a monster, no one's talked about it. Absolutely perfect for Ali. Pochettino must just be saying behind the scenes.
Been buzzing round and getting. He's now top of the assists table as well. He's on 10.
Yeah.
And Kane's top scorer in the league and Eriksen's top assist holder in the league. These are two players that you could easily say didn't really start playing properly until November sort of time. When Kane came back from his injury, and Eriksen was really poor until sort of mid November to December. It's crazy.
I mean, that's the thing about Kane. He's top scorer in the league, ahead of players who have been pretty great for most of the season. Mm. And I mean, since the turn of the year, even though it's a bit of a fake stat, or was it the end of when was the Southampton game?
After Christmas. So those two games, he scored four in two, and then West Brom was early.
So more or less since the turn of the year, is he only really been the Kane of kind of this time last year when he was just brilliant.
Mm.
Before that, you thought he was initially struggling from the Euros, and I thought he did look a couple of yards off at the start of the season. He just looked slower.
Mm.
Then he started to feel his way back. Then he got the injury, and then he was feeling his way back again. So I think he's got four penalties, admittedly, but he's only just now hitting the form.
Yeah, and he's had a bit of a rest.
And
there's a lot of teams coming up.
Scored more goals than anyone else in the Premier League.
And there's games coming up which we will come on to in a second where he can really fill his boots. And if we keep playing as we are, there's games in the fixture list, and I know that's not the most important thing. Individual accolades aren't, but he could actually go on and be Golden Boot winner for the second year in a row as well.
Yeah, the first Englishman since Owen to do that.
Is that right?
In the 90s.
Do you know what stat surprised me in that Football 365 thing was most hat-tricks went before the age of 23, and Kane had four. Owen had seven.
Owen was fucking good for about 2.5 years.
Wasn't he? Yeah. Unbelievable. Like,
But he never managed back-to-back consecutive 20-goal seasons.
I think that's right.
I'm telling you, it's right, mate.
Oh, sorry, mate. Yeah.
Right. Yeah,
come back from Thailand with a newfound confidence.
Kane is currently one of five Englishmen to get to score back to 20 goals in back-to-back seasons.
Right.
Along with Sheringham,
Shearer,
Andy Cole, and Sir Les.
Okay.
So if he gets one more, he'll go into a club of four players to have scored back-to-back 20-goal seasons in three consecutive years.
Yeah.
Sheringham didn't do it. Sheringham never managed
that. And all of those players I'd consider a football generation ago, if you like.
Oh, yeah.
All like 10, 15 years ago in their prime, weren't they? So,
but these are only Englishmen. I mean,
but still.
Will have done it. Henri did it. You know,
of course.
Times,
but,
Suarez.
Yeah.
But yeah,
English.
So, English.
Mentioned it there. The remaining games that we've got, just as a little exercise, let's do a little prediction. So we're currently on 56 points.
Right. I don't want to play this game.
Do you not?
Well, what good can possibly come
out? I know. Yeah, okay. I was going to read out the remaining fixtures and see
read them out, by all means.
I was going to say which ones you thought, how many points you thought we'd get from
them.
Then I was going to point out, in the last five seasons, the amount of points that's been needed for top four. 66, 70, 79, 73, and 69. That season went up 79. Ridiculous.
That was the no, season's worst wasn't. Finish.
That's the 73 one. Oh, okay. 79 one was when we had AVB and Sherwood, and we came a long way sixth.
Okay. Long way fifth.
Sixth. We were fifth. We were sixth in Sherwood's year. I looked it up earlier. Okay. All right. Who we got left? Southampton at home, Burnley away, Swansea away, Watford at home, Bournemouth at home, Leicester away, Arsenal at home, West Ham away, Man United at home, Hull away.
Well,
I'm not. Let's not do the.
Spurs could conceivably win the next six games.
Yeah,
and then it's all then where they finish where. We finish will be all about the Arsenal, West Ham, Man United running.
I think which is
pretty similar to last year when there was that huge week where West Ham away and followed by Arsenal. It's more or less the same as last season.
Yeah,
although
right.
That was a bit earlier.
Yep, you are right.
You know what? What I'll say, I don't want to do like a prediction for each game, but and this also is kind of intended to take a bit of the shine off the Stoke and Everton games. I felt almost for a while that. It's a little bit difficult to get excited about any. It's almost got to the point now where it's slightly difficult to get excited about any wins against the non-top six.
Really?
No, not excited, but I don't think there's not much to be read from it. I don't think.
Right. Okay.
And I've thought this kind of ever since the City and which other tops? City and Liverpool games.
Yeah.
So not a huge amount of time, but I think obviously you've got to beat, you've got to beat everyone.
Yeah.
If you want to be champions, but I think what Pochettino has sussed out already is winning games against the teams outside the top six.
Mm.
He's cracked it. It's already been cracked. He knows how to do it. The players know how to do it, and. Yes, there are maturity issues, including the end of the Everton game, by all accounts, mm-hmm. where Spurs looked a bit naive. And Pochettino constantly striving for improvement and saying he's not happy, and of course he'll look to improve. But I think Tottenham have got that sussed, and I think they should expect to be beating the teams outside that Men's League, kind of home and away, the majority of times. Now it's all about beating those teams around them, which they haven't been so good at. So I almost feel like there's six games coming up: Southampton, Burnley, Swansea, Watford, Bournemouth, Leicester. And I expect Spurs to win all six of those.
I think Leicester are going to beat us.
Well, how can you? I mean, that's
because they're bastards.
Yeah, well, but whatever.
And they're
do you know what I mean, though? Like,
I do know what you mean.
And if they did win all six of those, I wouldn't like. People would be saying, Spurs are. We don't know what Chelsea are going to do, but people might be saying, "Oh, Spurs can do this; that they can win the title, they can draw it back in." Let's say the gap is 4 or 5 points at that point, and they look so great, etc. But I would just think, well, it doesn't really matter. We've now got Arsenal and West Ham away, and United. And I'm kind of counting West Ham away because that is their cup final, and we lost it last season.
And if we are in the hope of getting anything, they will adore. Yeah. Yeah,
so it's,
that would
it's,
make
it's,
their
it's a,
season,
yeah,
actually.
And it's a high pressure. I suppose I'll include games outside the top six mini-league if it's a huge high pressure one like that one.
I think Leicester goes in there as well then.
Okay, so there's four huge high pressure games there, and those are the ones I'll be looking at. I wouldn't feel confident drawing loads of conclusions from another 4-0 home win against Southampton, except to say that Kane's brilliant, Spurs are brilliant, they know how to beat these teams. Does that seem fair?
I think that does seem fair. I've got nothing against that at all. I think it was, for me, I'm looking at getting the most amount of points available purely for the Champions League respects. I'm not looking at a title. I'm also looking at finishing above Arsenal. And I don't care how small time that makes me. I really don't give a shit anymore.
It's got to be done, isn't it?
It has been. Yeah. And also, I'm looking at these games and I do think that timing plays a massive part in where you finish. So, for instance, Watford and Bournemouth and Leicester, by the time we play them, two home, one away, all of those could be safe by the time we play them and have nothing to play for. And I appreciate the Newcastle game last year puts a nice caveat on that. But they could be games that we just walk, and it just, if Arsenal drop a couple of points, as they have been doing recently, if we pull clear, to have the Arsenal at home game, not matter, because it's going to be huge, it's going to matter, but for it to not have anything huge riding on it, if they get nowhere near us with a horrible win, which could, hopefully not, but could happen. Do you know what I mean? I just think the timing, and the same with West Ham. If we go into West Ham having just beaten Arsenal, and it means that we are guaranteed to finish above them, going to West Ham has a little bit less pressure on it. Because that's why Southampton and Newcastle, in a way, happened. We didn't feel like we had anything to play for. But I feel like we've learned a few lessons. Maybe. I've definitely jinxed this. What have I done?
Yeah, this is what I didn't want to start looking ahead into, like, 2 months' time and saying...
All right, we'll ignore that. That didn't happen. No, let's move on. Let's quickly do the Millwall game. Last ever FA Cup game at White Hart Lane. Chance to get to the semi-finals for the first time since 2012. Considering how poorly we played with the second string, particularly against Wickham, but I think Aston Villa needs to go in there as well. And then mix that with the strong lineup that he played against Fulham and... how you said before, the FA Cup draw, the first game that we had, that it's going to take a run of easy home fixtures for Poch to take it seriously. But, you know, against Fulham, he definitely took it seriously and we wiped the floor with them. Is he perhaps waking up to the idea that this is a really good route for Spurs to take to win a trophy, to take the next step with this team? If we're not going to win the title this year, we're out of the Europa League earlier than usual.
Yeah, well, he hasn't got much. If he wants to win a trophy, there's not really much.
Yeah, no, but you know, but then we've seen in the FA Cup before that he doesn't really give a shit about winning a trophy. Not necessarily.
Oh, yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah,
sorry, that's where I'm going with.
I think the way things are, the circumstances, he's got to go for it against. There'll be no pissing about against Millwall, I wouldn't have thought.
No.
And it's a week till Southampton.
Yeah.
So I would think it would be the very strongest team.
Yeah, get it done early.
Yeah, and that would be the case for the FA Cup from now on.
All right. Yeah, that's fair enough.
Yeah, no, that's
what are you expecting the atmosphere to be like? You see a few sort of plastic hooligan crap being thrown around, graffiti on each other's grounds and stuff. But it's 2017 now, lads.
Yeah, I'm going to get to White Hart Lane like... 2.5
on Saturday
early. Yeah. Sleep in the press room.
Yeah.
I'm not going to piss about. I don't know, mate.
There's no point, is there? Steer clear, guys.
Hopefully just... the press box is serving breakfast and I'll just get there at like 10.
Yeah, you're going to have a very different experience.
I don't know, honestly, mate, to be honest. I don't want to be hanging around Tottenham like half an hour before kickoff.
No, but, or after as well.
Yeah.
Really not look. I'm not actually going. I didn't get a ticket in the end.
Okay. I don't know. I suspect it will be the type of game that everyone's so tremendously worried about and paranoid about. It'll be massively over-policed and actually nothing will really happen.
Yeah.
Because there'll be such a massive police presence and everyone will be sort of terrified. I expect the atmosphere in the ground to be really good because, you know, Millwall have got a bad rep, but they have. I think their biggest concern from the club side was they have got a core of the majority of their fans want us to go and support the team and watch football.
Mm.
And then the people that want to just have a fight ruin it. So they try and make sure that the minority doesn't ruin it for the majority. So I think it will be. I think it will be a good atmosphere, and obviously, yeah, last ever cup game at White Hart Lane, a massive opportunity for Spurs to basically beat a League One side at home.
Yeah.
As I said the other week, if you strip away the rivalry, the London Derby element, it's basically Spurs playing a League One, mid-table side for a chance to reach the semi-final. So.
Potential. There's a potential there for us to slip up, obviously, as there has been in every round. But I think we saw the step up in quality between the Wickham game, admittedly a different opposition, but even the Aston Villa game at home and the performance we put in away. And again, I think you're right. The fact that we've got 2 weeks in between, it treat it like a Premier League game, or treat it for the lineup at least. Stick Vorm in for Lloris.
I don't even know if he'll even. I think Winks will play.
Yeah,
and I think
Son. Son in for Dele or Ericsson, maybe.
Can play Ali and Kane.
Yeah, I suppose. I suppose if you're 2-3-0 up,
take Dembele.
Yeah.
And yeah, maybe Son.
Trippier. I think Trippier will get a nod,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, but I feel like Spurs are at the point, which they were in Pochettino's first season, when he's literally got 15 or 16 that he actually trusts now.
Mm.
And he probably started the season with more like 20, but you know, Janssen's not really trusted.
It's been
anymore,
chipped away,
isn't
it?
He?
Yeah.
Wimmer's not really trusted anymore. Sissoko's very borderline.
Mm.
Sissoko might get a start, though. I feel like just the price tag makes a difference just because he's 30 million. Pochettino.
3 months to sell him.
Pochettino's probably got being leaned on by Levy a little bit to try and give him some minutes. And so there's the 11. There's Lamella, who we don't know.
Oh, yeah.
There's Rose, who we come back. And then beyond that, there's about sort of four or five who you think could get minutes. And then the rest, I wouldn't expect to see them really again this season.
No, yeah, I think you said that after the Wickham game. All right, cool. Let's do some list of questions. We've got a little bit of time left. Andy Perry, at Andy Perry 79. If we were to lose Poch to Barca this summer, as there is a rumour going around, who would you replace him with? This is the thing I spoke to you about before we started recording. I want to ask, and it's a good question from Andy, but I want to ask a slightly different question. Part of the reason I think Wenger is being spoken about as probably getting a 2-year extension or looking to sign another deal is because I don't think they feel like there's an outstanding candidate. Whereas we are in the position where we could lose a manager because another team has taken him. I don't think it's going to happen. I think he'll be here next season, but it's being spoken about. If you were is it Tuchel at Dortmund?
I'm just thinking of him, yeah.
If you were a Tuchel or a manager of that ilk, and you were offered Arsenal or Spurs as a managerial position right now, unbiased, what would you go for? What do you think is the more attractive?
Oh, that's difficult, isn't it?
I thought of this question on the way in, and I genuinely thought about it for the entire walk, because there's so many pros and cons to both of them. It's not simple, is it? And I do think Tuchel's the probably the calibre of manager that both clubs could realistically go for now.
I don't know. I think it depends on the... I don't know enough about Tuchel to be able to answer for him. But I think it would depend on the kind of manager you are, really. I think actually Wenger and Pochettino are really similar in a lot of ways. And almost the main way is that neither of them really likes making signings.
Mm.
I don't think Pochettino does particularly like making signings. But I think Arsenal as a club aren't averse to it. As in, I think if Wenger was a manager who wanted to spend 70 million on Higuain, he probably could. Whereas Pochettino couldn't.
Yeah.
So I think if you were a manager that genuinely prefers to, and Klopp's says, I don't know enough about him, but Klopp also says this as well, like, why do you always ask me about signings? Why don't you ask me about training players I've already got here? If you're a manager that genuinely prefers to train players and improve them, then and you feel you could do that, then Spurs, I think Spurs maybe. Just edge it.
Add to that that's currently in place. You've gone big, really big picture there as well. Think of it as just the basics of the 11 that you can put out on the pitch.
Oh, right, yeah, yeah.
Our first 11, you don't really need to look at seriously replacing one of those 11 with a younger and a fresher.
Is so much better than Arsenal.
This is what I mean. But with Arsenal, there are at least 6 or 7. And again, we're probably setting ourselves up for it to this point
but then,
again.
But you know what? If there's the money available. Yeah, but then you could also say, which would be quite interesting, imagine if Pochettino went to Arsenal. I would... like
die.
No, but think how good he could make Kieran Gibbs and Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain
probably
and Danny Welbeck really fucking good really quickly. I reckon he could.
Yeah, he might probably.
I don't know.
But then he wouldn't have half their defence. Wouldn't have Czech. I don't think he'd have a lot.
But think of the defence he had when
he
came to Tottenham. It was Chiriches, Dawson.
Still had. Well,
had Rose Walker. He's improved them. I mean, they weren't what they are today. They weren't the best defence in the league back then.
Fair.
Walker was considered clumsy. You know, he had that one good year. I think To answer Andy's question, Tuchel would be a good bet.
I like the little the guy that used to manage Chile, the little stumpy guy. That he's I don't know where he is now. I think he was at Sevilla. No, he's not at Sevilla. I can't remember where he went. He was a Chile manager in the World Cup, and they played this like really hard pressing game.
Is he not out in Spain? No, I've had a complete mind blow.
No. I don't know, but you know who I'm talking about—the little bald guy. Really,
I can picture him, but I can't remember his name.
No idea what his name is. No, but
I'm not really sure. But this is crap, isn't it?
Awful content. Sorry. I think unbiased. I still think Spurs is the more attractive to go into right now. There's an immediate and a future. With Arsenal, have got a lot of problems, which £250 million might solve, but you've got to spend it.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, agreed.
And you ain't going to get it. So let's move on. This next guy's got the greatest surname, if it is his surname, not just a handle.
It's a sweet name.
Jonathan Lovelady, at JPS Lovelady.
Sweet surname.
Great surname. Is our home form being affected positively by the fact that it is our last season at White Hart Lane, or are we just good? On the face of it, I was like, this is one of those sort of run-of-the-mill questions. But it's actually a good question, because do you think it's feeding into anything? Or are we just a really the best that we've been at White Hart Lane for, you know, a number of years?
I think it's a bit of both.
Who would it be affecting? Would Pochettino feed that into players?
We've been good at home. We've been good at home for a while, though. If you think back to last season, I think we lost 3 home games: Newcastle, Leicester, and Southampton.
Mm.
But otherwise, we're pretty great there. And again, you know, it's easy to say this and it sounds a bit ridiculous, but I almost view all 3 of those defeats as kind of big anomalies. Newcastle was just such a strange performance.
Yeah.
It was really uncharacteristic. It was one of those that was inexplicable in a way. It was just so poor. Leicester was obviously, they were doing that to everyone, and their away form was an anomaly.
Yeah.
We know that that whole season was an anomaly. And then Southampton was part of the kind of mind frag collapse nonsense. So I suppose we've been good at home for a while, so I think we are just good. But then I also think Pochettino probably has it in his head now, and he said it about a month ago. He said he's dreaming of an unbeaten season at White Hart Lane.
Oh, I didn't see that.
It was quite a low-key thing. But he was kind of in a presser quote, and it might have got lost. But
his celebration at the end of the Everton game as well.
I did see that when he turned to the crowd.
Yeah, you don't see that very often. And I think I mentioned it last week in the Ghent review, how animated he was on the touchline in that second half.
Mm.
Considering it as a trophy, he's not. It's just little elements of Poch that does make me think he's starting to see an opportunity here in this last few months.
I think he's not an animated man, really. He is on the touchline.
I know,
he is.
But you never see him do a leap. He's not a Klopp who gets a throw in and
he's not showy.
Punching walls.
I think Pochettino has an ego and he's got. He would love to go. He feels a sense of history.
Mm.
He would love to be the manager to go the last season of White Hart Lane and unbeaten.
Mm.
He would love it, and he would love his name to be remembered in association with that, even if he achieves nothing else. I imagine that really it's one of those things where, how many home games do you play a season in the league?
19. Yeah.
So I imagine after maybe 7 or 8 games unbeaten, maybe he just started to sniff out that opportunity.
Mm.
And I wouldn't be surprised now if he's really that's in his head and he's really counting the home games. You know, if he's looking at them going Southampton, Watford, Bournemouth.
Would you be happy with that?
Arsenal.
As in, would you be happy for the manager of your team to be thinking like that now?
I think it's a slightly dangerous way of thinking, because you want to be winning games, not losing them.
Mm.
And Spurs have fallen into that trap a little bit in the past under Pochettino. I think last season, actually before the Newcastle game I just mentioned.
And this season a lot. We had 11 draws in a row or something stupid.
Yeah, there have been a couple of long unbeaten runs. And I did wonder at the time whether that becomes more important to Pochettino and the players than actually winning the game.
Mm.
And that's when it becomes a bit safe, which isn't really what he's about. But I think he wants to... He feels the history, and he feels the emotion of the place, and he knows what it means or would mean to not lose there in the league. Or indeed in the cup, I suppose, lost there in the cup. No, they lost at Anfield in the League Cup. And they haven't lost in the Champions League. So, actually, if Spurs beat Millwall, that would be a... And then don't lose in the league.
Yeah.
It would be a whole season.
Yeah.
So I think he would love to do that.
I do think if we'd have played Champions League there, we wouldn't have been beaten as well.
Do you reckon?
Mm.
What, in the whole Champions League?
In Monaco, Leverkusen. And
yeah, I think we would have still lost. Quarterfinals and played two legs against someone.
I mean, the games that we did lose, I don't think we're in the group stages. We would have eventually, of course.
Smashed by Munich, it was Real Madrid.
Yeah, on the way to the final again. Let's finish. I suppose this feeds into the last question. @AT_Spurs. What would be the perfect send off for White Hart Lane this season? Unbeaten?
Title.
Of course. Realistically, unbeaten and second? It feels.
I think beating Arsenal and finishing above them, and that, as you said, that's the fourth to last game, so it's pretty unlikely.
Mm.
But
not impossible.
Imagine a win guarantees a finish above them. Not completely beyond the realms of possibility if they carry on
losing. That happened,
that would be a great send off.
And then United game and then whatever.
Well, it depends, you know, mate. It depends what the objectives are at this point. But I think yeah, that there are loads of nice send offs. Unbeaten season, second, beating Arsenal, title.
We have got
nice possibilities.
Six more games, Millwall included.
Oh, what, Hart Lane?
Millwall, Southampton, Watford, Bournemouth, Arsenal,
maybe.
Man United.
Or maybe we. Got a whole other
season. Oh, maybe, yeah. Maybe that's why they haven't made a big deal out of it. I think you said it earlier, actually.
Well, they can't,
yeah,
can just... they? If they start driving black cabs around the place.
Yeah. Now, that is not a perfect send-off. I don't want any of that.
No.
Well, I think...
The club has said, and they've been saying for the whole season, admittedly, that, you know, there's this whole business of they don't believe they're leaving White Hart Lane. They believe they are just building a new stadium on White Hart Lane.
Yeah, yeah.
So they will restrict the kind of fare thee well to the United game. I think after the United game, assuming that Wembley clause has been activated,
yeah,
there will be some kind of goodbye.
I'd like
to that stadium.
I'd like them just to maybe just turn off the lights and let, I don't know what the safety implications are, but. Turn off the lights and just have everyone sing. You know what I mean? Just an empty stadium or an empty ground, rather. Empty pitch, just the fans. Players go off after the game. Just, you don't need any announcement. You don't need any bands on there. Just let the fans do what they want. Let them make their own noise. Let them sing. Let them have the stadium to themselves, even if it's for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
No video, nothing like that. Not yet. Just give. That's what I'd like them to do. I don't feel like, I don't want to make it Christmas. I don't want to make it, here's some enforced fun. Here's Chaz and Dave. You know, do that by all means, but just give fans that little bit of breathing space, that 15 minutes. If they want to leave, if they want to see it for the last time and go, you know, by all means, if they don't want to stick around. But I just think there could be a nice under. What's the word? Sort of a subtle way for fans
suggest it.
Just their own. I just have.
Yeah, to the club.
When you're listening, Daniel, obviously. Yeah. That's what I want to see, but yeah, who knows. All right, anything else to add?
No.
Just in general?
Welcome
back, Dan.
Thanks very much.
It felt like a long time. Well, we'll be
good
back.
Good to be back. And visit Thailand for everyone who goes.
Yeah.
I get £10 from the Thai tourist board.
That would be a nice way of. Well, it's not true, is it?
It's not true.
No, it would be a nice thing to do, though, wouldn't it?
Be good.
So we'll be back next week. So you're going to Millwall on Sunday.
I am. I'll tell you what I'm doing. I'm speaking to Jordan Archer tomorrow morning.
Jordan Archer, Spurs goalkeeper.
Now Millwall number one. So that I'm doing an interview with him, and that'll be up on.
Did he ever play for us?
He never made an appearance, but he played. He'd be a good person to talk to because he played with kind of Kane and Winks and Carroll and.
understudy to Lloris.
Yeah, he worked for a season with Pochettino. And,
oh, was he there that late?
Yeah,
I didn't realise he was
in June 2015, I think.
Okay.
So he played for a season under Poch and, you know, under Tony Jimenez, the goalkeeping coach. Mm. And I'm really looking forward to speaking to him and hopefully not jet lagged and quite as monged out as I have been most of today. So,
all right, mate.
Yeah, look out for that.
You get yourself home and get yourself, just make sure you set an alarm because that could be quite tragic
be bad,
if you
it?
Just yeah. sleep through it. But yeah, good to have back. We'll see you next Monday. We'll see you, dear listeners, next Monday as well. Thank you very much for listening and goodbye.
Ciao, ciao.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.